Hello and welcome to this week's Big Boat Interview. I am Cécile Garrett, editor of Boat International US edition. And today, I catch up with naval architect Rob Doyle and yacht designer Peter van Heest on their latest collaboration on an eye-popping 40-meter trimaran concept called Domus. We discuss why they have chosen the trimaran hull form and how they use the massive space to create a floating villa which could take a family around the world without using a drop of fuel or become one of the hippest party platforms anchored close to shore. Hi, Peter and Rob, thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Pretty good. Thank you for inviting us for this podcast.
Yeah, same thing here.
Good. So it's my first time having two people on the podcast. So let's make it work. And I just wanted to kind of go over your backgrounds. I don't know if, Rob, you want to start? Tell us a little bit about how you got into the yachting industry. And
It's over two decades ago now since leaving university in Southampton as a naval architect. I joined a race boat designer in Newport, Rhode Island, Roger Martin, designing open 60s and very fast performance boats back in the day. Then I went professional racing on the maxi circuit, and then I joined Ron Holland at 26 as a chief designer for him.
26,
so
wow.
I'm learning very quickly, very fast with Ron. And yeah, I was with Ron for about 17, 18 years, doing a huge amount of projects with Ron from 96 up to 2013, 2014. And a lot of firsts in the industry. The largest aluminium hull at the time, which was Felicita West, M5, which was the biggest composite boat in the world, a lot of production boats, and a lot of one-off, very special projects during that time. So got a huge amount of experience on what works and what doesn't work, and how to deal with yards and brokers and project managers and owners and crew and stuff like that, and getting all those inputs to create a fantastic product of the superyachts.
I'm curious, what attracted you to naval architecture? Is that something you always wanted to do?
Back in the 80s, there was no real search to see if there was an industry. You know, I mean, you saw the glossy magazines like Boat International, and they were always superstar type of stuff. It was actually a friend of my dad who was an industrial designer, who came back from Southampton with a brochure. And I still have the brochure tucked away in my filing cabinet. And that was a eureka moment. I'm going, that's what I want to do for my life. I didn't realize you had a job of drawing boats. So I was 16, 17, that was my focus, was to get into that university and study it. And from there, then it was just doors opening and just moving forward and contacts and building up my skill set and eventually working with Ron and then developing my own brand and going out on my own, which is scary, but it's been a lot of fun, actually, to being able to have that ability to do blank canvas.
Yeah. How about you, Peter? What brought you to this beautiful world of design?
I have to blame my parents for that. No, they had a boat since I was born, basically. And we always went sailing every weekend, every holiday was on the boat. I didn't really know what I wanted to study after secondary school. So I'd always loved drawing and sketching and making stuff with my hands. So obviously I didn't go into the yachting straight away, but I did a industrial design course. So finished that. But towards the end, you had practical periods within companies. And I did that with a shipyard. The first one was with Trintella Shipyard in Holland, and that's how I met Ron Holland Design. That was an eye-opener. At the time, at the shipyard, it was just where CAD and computers started to evolve, basically. And I rolled in at the right time, because before it was all by hand, and I would say the old-fashioned way. And in my industrial design course, I still did the by hand. But then, really, halfway the course, they were teaching us AutoCAD and MicroStation and 3D modeling. So I was the new kid on the block, I think, in the shipyard. And then from then on, my second practical period for the school was I actually did it with Ron Holland in Ireland, and with this and with two shipyards in the south of England. One was Wesley and one was Bowman, and we did a combined project where they were using one hull shape, one hull mold to make different brands of boats, basically. So yeah, that was my start. And then from then on, I was a captain for a couple of years on a sailing yacht in the US. So yeah, so then I knew what you designed was not always right, you know. I basically learned very quickly that stuff can go wrong. What you design is not always what is the most practical. So that's what I got out of that. And then after that, I came back to Europe and I called up Ron and I said, hey, you got any work? And then he said, yeah, no problem. We just signed up Mirabella 5. So please come over and help us. And then I met Rob. Well, actually, I met Rob before in my first stint. He was just starting and I was the young student. So yeah, by then we already knew each other for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I think. And then my now current partner Tracy, she was the interior designer for M5, so for Mirabella 5, sorry. And so that happened. And then she went her own path. Then she went her own path. She went to Francis Design for interiors, and then I went to René van der Velde in Holland to learn more about motor yachts, basically, because before I was only sailing. So then with René, I did motor yacht styling and see the other side of yachting, basically. And then after that, started on our own, basically. So did a project management job. Basically, I think I saw every side of the table within I wouldn't say the concept stage, but within the start of a project. I think I've been on every side of the table, except probably a supplier. Not supplier, but an owner's rep. I'm not an owner, of course, but an owner's rep and all of that. So all that knowledge that we take in, we, of course, try to put it out in the new stuff.
So both of you, obviously, you've worked together for a while, and now that you have your own companies, you are working together. Peter, you're in the Netherlands, and Rob, you're in Ireland. But that doesn't stop anyone these days, right?
No, not at all. I mean, with technology nowadays, with Teams meetings and stuff, I mean, we're communicating almost daily, back and forth. And the way COVID changed the industry, I think, with the staff here in the office, we had to work remotely. So we had to quickly change how we set up the office to allow this remote working stuff. And Teams allowed us to be able to put everything up into the net and be able to work within different groups and stuff like that with the staff in the office who are now working at home. So it made it much easier to deal in with other studios like Peter and stuff like that. So time wasn't a kind of having people in the office isn't actually critical anymore now that we've got so used to working remotely and working over the screen. And it's, we'll just spend hours just chit-chatting away on certain details or something like that, or catching up. So again, it's never been a problem on that side of things. But like Peter said, back in the old days, we all learned how to draw by hand, which is still a fantastic skill to be able to translate information quickly to an owner. When we all moved into the CAD arena, you had to be on site. You needed a big machine. You needed everything at that stage. It used to be a lot more hardware driven. Now everything's a lot more software driven. Everything's up in the cloud. Stuff's got easier. The machines have got smaller. And it allows us to communicate much faster back and forth. So, distance isn't a problem for us.
Yeah, very good. So I cannot help but notice that in the last few concepts that you have created together, obviously you focus, number one, on sailing. Number two seems to be important to you is the aspect of sustainability. So I remember you put out a concept called Fury, I think.
Yes.
beautiful sailing yacht, and you were talking about fuel cells. Did you look in depth into that? Are you confident the technology is here now?
It is. Yeah, it's here. You need a brave soul. I mean, it's not. There's never going to be a silver bullet, without a doubt. I mean, from the current projects we're building at the moment in Holland, we have a 53 in build, and what we've gained from that research allowed us to move into the Fury with the fuel cells and the battery technology and regeneration. And having solar now as well really actually allows us to kind of, and the way we're actually powering the boats with a DC bus system allows you to input energy from a number of different positions as such, from hydrodynamically, from dragging the prop, from solar, from hydrogen. So
the role of the DC bus is allocation of energy. Is that for people who may not be techies?
Sorry?
The role of a DC bus, can you explain a little bit for people who may not be techies?
A DC bus, a DC bus allows you don't have to sync generators and stuff like that with the frequencies. So it allows you to use the battery pack as almost like a bank, and you basically draw off the bank rather than trying to set up a system where everything has to be synced through the inverters and stuff like that. So it's just an easier way of running the boat where you can just dump power from everywhere. You're not too worried about how the power is generated with regards to the frequencies and stuff like that. It just goes straight into the system. And that helps a lot more with regards to putting different components together as such. I mean, yes, our current builds are diesel electric systems. We don't really have main engines anymore. We're just running off the shelf generators into the system. So that's a nice baby step. The Fury was another look at this even more with the fuel cell system. And now with the new Trimaran, is with so much acreage on the sky deck for solar panels, it kind of ticks the box of when the boat is actually stationary, how do you generate electricity from the fuel cell and also from the solar. So we're developing so much power now from these systems that you can actually create your own fuel by reversing the hydrogen system, because you're creating the byproduct of the pure water that you can cycle back into it with the energy from the solar or from the prop, and you can create your own hydrogen again. So it's never a perfect system, but we're getting a long way down the road with this technology. Now, regulation-wise, class still has a problem with hydrogen and storage, depending on if they're going 700 bar or 300 bar. Do they want it off outside of the boat, or how do you handle that? So we have systems that we're developing how to actually implement that, and we're using a lot of... We've signed a couple of NDAs with a couple of companies in Scandinavia, which are developing this systems already. So again, you know, the technology is there. We just need someone brave enough to jump in.
Well, speaking of brave, I mean, we're going to give a little bit of background on your concept that we will discuss a little bit more in depth, which is called Domus, which is a 40-meter trimaran with a beam of 35-something meters.
35 meters.
Wow. We will have some images on boardinternational.com, of course, where people can go see it. But it is really eye-popping, amazing in terms of the scope of the project, the technology you discuss in it, certainly. And of course, the space use, which is quite unique on such a platform. I was curious why there is very few catamarans, like luxury trimarans, I'm sorry, in the world, really, maybe a dozen or so. And none of them really have those really extended hulls on the side. They have smaller side hulls that maybe are acting more as sponsored for stability. So what pushed you in that direction?
Well, we got a request for a 40-meter catamaran design concept. So myself and Peter and Mark here in the office, chief scientist, kind of looked at it, and we came up with a concept and everything else, and it ticked all the boxes, and we went a little bit wider than the current fleet that's out there. And we sat around going, and the more we analyzed it, and from experience of dealing with Pandennis, who were building a boat called Christopher when they were building Hemisphere. So we were on site there and seeing the complexity of what they were going through in actually building Hemisphere, and got to know the owner very well and the captain and understanding their concept. So we got it from a lot of information from those sides on the catamaran and stuff like that. And we sat around, and the biggest problem with catamarans is you're duplicating all the systems because they're in two different hulls. So we sat around and we thought about the catamaran we came up with, and I said, gee, Chris, you know, if for the performance side of things, you're better to go to trimaran, because a trimaran is always faster because you can lift one hull straight out. You're reducing the weight of surface area quite considerably. And what we could do is design everything into one hull, make it like a monohull, and just have the two armors as just less kind of complicated, so with very little systems inside it. So we could make it a lot cheaper to build and less scary for a yard to take on the project. Plus the fact that we'd have all the rigging loads and everything else on the main hull. We don't have to have too much racking happening in the trimaran, the armor hulls. So again, we suddenly kind of made a lot more sense to, on a performance game and also on a systems-wise, to look at the trimaran. And, you know, we looked at it and said, let's go crazy here. Let's push it to as far as we can and see what happens. And I think, you know, when we're doing these projects, we never get enough time to turn over enough rocks to find these lovely little caveats along the way. And it was great fun bouncing stuff to Peter, because we'd send him the rough hull lines and going, right, okay, what can you think? Here's all the levels. What do you want to do with this? And he comes back going, okay, can we push it this way? Can we push it that way? And it was a great kind of meshing of minds as such. And we came up with the fantastic trimaran you see in front of you. And it suddenly clicked with us. And when you look at the boat and going, because it's, you know, it's very close to nearly like a box as such, but it still looks really, really well, then you know you're onto it, because we're our own worst critics. So we always kind of judge, and, you know, a designer never finishes until someone says stop, paying the bills or something. So the fact that we kind of really loved where we were going with this and how we were pushing it, and suddenly Peter came up with an amazing sky deck, and the interior styling and the exterior styling merged really, really well together, and suddenly we can suddenly see the project come to life in front of us. And we approached it in from a technical way and also a styling and interior way to make sure it actually worked and that a yard could take it and build it as such.
What material would the construction be?
From what we found before, you can actually build it out of aluminium or in composite, depending on what the preference of an owner. What we found over the years, unless you're doing carbon, a GRP boat and an aluminium boat would come out about the same weight. You know, there's pros and cons for each one. Some people are GRP people and some people are aluminium, and it, you know, you can't convince them anything other than that. So
there are some people out there who kind of pushing the argument that aluminium is more sustainable. Do you buy into that?
It depends on where the aluminium is coming. We never get a sticker saying this is from recycled cans, you know.
Right.
You know, it's come out of the ground with huge machines and processed out of a smoky factory. So unless we get stickers saying it, it's pretty hard. And the aluminium we look for is very high grade. So it has to be very pure, and it's very strong alloys. So yes, there is an argument for that, and it is a lot. It's part of the greenwashing that's happening out there. So again, it's, you need again to get someone brave to be able to chase that down all the way back to roots to see where your aluminium is coming from. It's something that we don't get from suppliers.
Peter, why don't you tell us, why is it called Domus? And how did you manage to find... it's a big platform, all one level for the guests or owners?
Yes. Yeah. No, Domus. Yeah. Well, of course, when we first set it up with the main hull and the two armors, and then you start to actually, see how much square meters you're going to create on main deck, it's not yard design anymore. It starts to become more architectural. So what can you do? And you're not limited to hull shapes with difficult cabins where so this is just basically a rectangle almost, and then you have to fit it all in. So the cool thing is, of course, everybody is always talking about, we have to see out, and we want to be involved in nature, and we want to see where we are. Yeah, that's one thing. But on the other thing, this thing is so wide that, you have to make interior or internal living spaces. And that's interior spaces, so enclosed. Or you can also have interior exterior spaces. So that's why we call it Domus, because we have two... what you can imagine, two open courtyards that you can close from above with panels. But yeah, in a way, it's like well, we didn't want to call it villa because that's a bit too, how do you say it? Too much land-based, the word. But domus, yeah, if you study it, it's yeah, it comes from the Roman times where you basically have living spaces around open spaces. So that's why we call it that.
Well, it looks totally amazing. I'll encourage people again to go take a look on our website, obviously. I'm kind of curious. Have you shown it to any potential buyers, or who has seen it so far, and what's the reaction been?
Yeah, we've shown it to one potential client who loved it and said, can we have a larger scale of this?
No.
So that got us really excited to look at and going. So if it works at a very small platform, scaling it up suddenly gets into very big numbers. So again, you come into a lot more difficult challenges with regards to the number of yards and the number of places you can actually and how you can build this. But we've had some amazing feedback from the potential clients we've sent it to. Some are kind of going, right, this is absolutely amazing and crazy, but where do you dock and stuff like that? But if you have a
Yes.
vessel like this, an 80-meter motor and sailboat doesn't that often go to very kind of tight marina spaces. They're always on the outside of a dock, so they can push off easier and stuff like that. And that'll be the same for this 40-meter. So this is a, you have to kind of think for the gross tonnage of this boat, it's the same as the 60, 65-meter motorboat.
What is it,
So
750? Is that it?
750 GT. So it's quite massive. A 46-meter motorboat is 500 GT. So suddenly, you're in a, yes, you're 40 meters, but technically you're actually a much bigger boat, and you would command that kind of outside space to allow you to dock these boats. But most boats do stay on anchorage a lot more than people envisage, I mean, and the sitting around and stuff like that. And they are, and marinas and harbors are getting bigger and bigger for these bigger vessels. And the 100 meter plus fleet is so big now, everything's catering to those. So we're actually now going to be a small boat in that grand scale of things. So dockage isn't a big problem anymore. So no, I mean, it's been fantastic getting the reaction from captains and owners and project managers and asking, going, how much does it cost? And the problem is, if you use the traditional metric of price per GT, it doesn't really work with this. So we need to have a very detailed specification and build program to go to a yard and go, right, now could you put a number to this? And showing them how the systems go together, and that's a lot easier to build than a traditional catamaran. Then we'd be able to come back with confidence with a more solid price. But the days of just looking at a previous project and working back from a GT is pretty hard. So price-wise, yeah, we have an idea of it there, but it's up there.
Yeah, well, yeah, the rigging is pretty impressive as well. I imagine the mast would be very, very tall.
Yeah, so we're going to be Panamax on beam and Panamax on height. And what we're proposing is,
Panamax on beam, you don't think about that too often.
we did check the Panamax canals and making sure that we can get through there.
Okay.
Looking at the rig as well, it's going to be almost like the same type of system as the America's Cup twin skin mainsail. So you get a lot more power from the same height platform. So we can develop a lot more thrust from the sail plan. And also, the way you have to kind of look at the rig is it's almost set in concrete. The boat will heel over on purpose to about a degree and a half to raise the hull out of the water. And the main hull will float a little bit higher as the Alma sinks, the leeward Alma sinks. And the boat basically just gets locked in at that stage. And no amount of extra sail area will heel the boat anymore. You're effectively in concrete. So you design the rig a lot more with paying out on the sheets and stuff like that. And the systems will have to be able to react a lot faster than that. But the ability to capsize the boat, which is one of the fears that most people catamarans have, the stability is so high, with this massive amount of beam, that's not, I can't see it ever happen. It's just so massive. So again, we've looked at it, and myself and Mark here in the office are big multi-hull sailors, and I still have an A-class still sitting in my driveway. And we understand the limits of catamarans and how to rack and how far you can push them. And the trimaran has always been the more stable platform and the most versatile platform over a catamaran. Catamarans are very unique for a very set of circumstances. And after that, you get into, once you're outside that, they get difficult. Whereas a trimaran can, you know, thread the line between the catamaran and the monohull kind of world a little bit better. Plus the fact we can reduce all the loads into the main hull and stuff like that, and give a lot more deck space right across and the extra beams. So the sail plan is designed to give you a lot more power and ease of use, but also give you a huge amount of performance as well to get you into the mid-20s boat speed wise.
So, I mean, as we said, like, there's only about a dozen trimaran in the world now. I mean, in terms of luxury, obviously on sailing and racing, there's quite a few more. And there is also another ancillary challenge is that I don't think the sailing market is growing substantially and hasn't been, despite the fact that obviously it sounds like a really good path if you want to avoid using a lot of fossil fuel. So do you see the market changing? Do you see more people coming that can grab onto this concept and run with it?
We also try to do with the Fury is to maximize our interior. So I wouldn't say we're going to go out of the, you know, go after the motor yacht market, but the if you compare the Furies as well as this Domus platform, yeah, you're competing basically with motor yacht volume. And as for the sailing yachts, Rob probably has a better idea, but yeah, I think the key thing is really, well, I wouldn't call it interior volume, but really interior space. You get so much more space out of the length of boat in with both concepts. So,
and that used to be always the argument against someone buying a sailboat was it heeled and there's not enough space for the length compared to a motor yacht. And these wide beam on the Fury stuff, wide beam monohulls with, you know, you're giving the massive internal space. They don't heel as much as the narrower boats. So you tick that box and the interior volume is the same as a motorboat. And when you go to the trimaran, it heels even less and you're even more than the same length motor yacht without going to a wedding cake height. So, I mean, I just came back from St. Bart's there in March and there was owners, I was talking to owners on the dock and they literally couldn't buy sailboats. And they're chasing the few boats are out there that are available and going straight into refit because they want a particular thing. There is a massive shortage of sailboats now. So I think the magic and the romance of sailboats is coming back because you go to a regatta and you turn up with a sailboat, everybody wants to know about your fantastic product. And it takes a lot of people to sail one of these boats. And there's kind of a lovely network of people, like-minded people, sailing against each other. So I think the pendulum is swinging back. And I think COVID was a little bit of a kicker for this, where people were spending a lot more time on the boats. But sitting on a motorboat with just a water slide gets a bit boring, or a couple of jet skis. You know, they get bored very quickly sitting in 30 degrees. So I think sailboats, they have a purpose when they start sailing, and it's part of the romance of everything, whereas a motorboat is just going from A to B.
Yes, that's true. So that's Domus is a big step, would be a big step for someone for many reasons, right? The size, the technology, and so forth. But Peter, do you see it as a future?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, as we can see it, also on the project, there are so much square meters of solar panels possibility in this. You know, if you have a monohull, you don't have that much solar power surface. That's really like the true advantage of this. You know, they talk about solar panel in sails, but yeah. It's not solid, so it's soft. And how do you, you know, is it durable? You know, I mean, maybe it works 10 times, but then after that, maybe it just gets wear down, and you have to start replacing stuff. While with this platform, you create so much square meters of solar that, you could, I mean, you could anchor the boat and you could run the boat with all the solar powers, solar power, and you don't need any extras, basically, just to run all your internal AC and other, energy consumers, basically. So, yeah, it's an ideal platform, basically.
Yeah.
And because you're developing so much speed from the Triman concept, the amount of energy you get from the prop, we've approached the design of props now in a completely different way. We went to manufacturers with a different set of criteria, and even they were kind of bemused at the start of why we wanted to go this way. And when they once they embraced it and did their own bit of research, they came back going, jeez, we never realized this, and this, and suddenly we hit a cliff. Now we know how far we can push the props for further regeneration. And they were quite surprised. No one's ever asked the questions that we did to the prop manufacturer. So the props are different. And, you know, we're developing so much power from the props now. And it doesn't really slow the boat down a lot, maybe a half a knot in boat speed terms. But you're generating so much power, even when you're sailing, that you get, you know, the energy you're getting from the solar is just going straight into the battery bank when it's working. The prop is developing enough to run the entire hotel load and extra to into the battery pack. And then if you have the backup of a hydrogen system there, suddenly you have three sources of power coming in, and you're a true hybrid. I mean, a hybrid is two separate power sources, and we managed to get three. So,
yeah.
And you cover the boat for all those weird kind of quirky, you know, let's go to Pacific, whereas, you know, hydrogen might be a problem, you know, and do 5,000 nautical miles. We can give you unlimited range, you know, and you've got tons of sun, you've developed, you know, your hydrogen, and you've got tons of wind, and you develop the power from that. So we're offering ability now to have unlimited range.
Yeah, and then even with the solar, of course, you can't go, I mean, I think if you shut all the systems off on board and you want a motor, you could still motor it, not at full speed, of course, but I'm sure you can do it at 4 or 5 knots slowly. And then, so you don't use anything, and the boat will just run on solar. So it's safe as well, in a way.
I mean, but like going back to the technology is there, you know, we're not inventing something, you know, where an owner is taking a big risk.
Right.
You know, the commercial side has sorted a lot of this out already, especially in the ferries and stuff like that, on the battery side of things and the propulsion systems. The solar stuff is tried and tested now and everything else. So again, it's, you know, we're not asking someone to, you know, be the guinea pig and just throw some money in there and hopefully something will pop out the other end. We've turned over all the rocks and we said, right, these are what you can do at a good budget, and still not have the risk of something failing on you. So I think it's important that clients feel that when they do take these unusual projects on, that they're not been exposed to losing out on somewhere in the project as such.
So how far in your concept are you? I mean, would there still be, I guess there would still be need some the engineering development further. How far are you from ready to build concept here?
Normally, you know, myself and Peter were only discussing this morning. What most people don't realize is it's a 4.5 to 5 year exercise. When a client says, okay, draw me a boat, to actually experiencing the boat on the water, it takes 9 months to develop a pack to be able to go to a yard with enough information for them to price to a contract to get an owner on board. And then there's another 3 or 4 months after that. So, and then you're into your 3.5 year build cycle. So there's, you do need to, where we are right now is going, right, here's what we can do. And because we are now looking at a different project for this particular owner, we put this one out there to show what we can do. But the next stage would be to go for, you know, put a pack towards a yard and create a specification, what class of regulation you want to go to, and all, and ask the difficult questions. Go to a yard and go, right, what do you think? Can you build this, and to what price? And That's the next stage. But you need an owner for that stage. That's something that you can't, you know.
On spec.
No.
It's too much. And people forget, it's 9 months of an office with five people working, churning drawings out to create a pack that can actually be taken seriously in a yard.
Have you thought of yards that could build this?
Yeah, there's a couple of yards out there. Most yards can take it on, you know, from a couple of Italians and the Dutch, obviously the likes of Pendennis and stuff like that, the English yards. So there's yards that can take it on because the way we're actually building everything into one main hall and the armours can be effectively bolted on afterwards.
That's pretty amazing to me. It's a monohull with
size. Yeah, it is, yeah. It isn't as scary as a big rigid structure at the very start. You know, you build it in separate components and then merge them all together at the end.
Right, okay. Well, I'd love to see that coming together. It's amazing. Bet you would too.
It's scary. People still, you know, 40 meters is still a big boat. Now, nowadays, everyone's thinking it's a small boat, but still, it's a big boat, you know. So, especially when you get into the 650 GT size, there's some big volumes going on there. And big loads.
So I guess I caught on that you were at the bucket. I wasn't there myself. How was it? What were the highlights there?
It was good. I mean, the social side was a little bit downplayed because of all the restrictions and the yacht hop wasn't going on, which is always a great place to meet and greet. But there was still a lot of owners walking the dock and just hanging out. And it was great to kind of meet with them and get a lay of the land. And there's a big appetite for change. Owners want to spend more time. They were forced to take time during COVID with their families, and they actually enjoyed it. So there's a lot of owners now going, okay, this is actually a good fun. You know, I can spend more time with family on board and really enjoy it. So we're in a weird situation where boats need to get in for refit for class and flag related issues, but owners don't want to put them in because that means time away from their holidays. So there's a big pressure now on refits to turn around really quickly. The least amount of work done to get the class and flag issue sorted and get the boats back out there. Build slot wise, there's no build slots at the moment for the next couple of years. So there is a shortage of good quality sailboats. And anytime a 50 or 60 meter comes up, they're snapped up, you know, straight away. So the appetite is there for the big sailboats, and they're getting bigger. I mean, we're pushing, you know, the limits on a lot of stuff that we, myself and Peter, are pushing on different projects. The appetite is there for bigger and bigger sailboats because people want to get back into it. Again, it goes back to the romance side of things. But at the moment, I had one owner who said he was chasing three boats just to buy one, you know. And brokers weren't calling them back because they didn't have anything to sell them. So the appetite is there. We just need to get out there with something different. Not another copy and paste boat. Not another one that's been, you know, a mimic of a mimic. You know, when people type into boats, super yachts, and it comes up on Google and go, oh, I want a bit of these boats all mashed together. It's been a lot of fun just drawing from a blank piece of paper, which most studios don't get the luxury to do because you're always under pressure to get something out the door. So that was quite unique working with Peter on that.
That is definitely a new looking concept. Amazing. I mean, I can see it. You know, I see a lot of concept about that are sort of like between a slow moving island to boats that are really moving, like a trimaran should be able to sail truly, but also is somewhat of an island because of the shape. And
yeah, but also basically all one floor, which is super unique. I mean, you can have a 60 meter motor yacht with the same gross tonnage, but yeah, you have to climb staircases to go places. But this one provides basically all guest amenities and cabins on one level. There's no steps. It's like being in your house. Well, if you have a house without staircases, it is. But it's unique. It's unique.
I've been on catamarans and I love them because of, you know, especially the upper saloon. You have all this space. It's amazing. But it's true that usually they use the side halls also for accommodation. So you're constantly up and down. So
yeah.
And you're squeezed into a lot smaller spaces as well because of that. So again, there's a lot of positives there. And you know, the concept that Peter did with the, you know, the layout inside. When we first sketched it up, we were kind of going, "Jeez, what do you do with so much space?" And again, it goes back to what Peter says. We're into almost urban planning here, isn't it? It's into kind of crazy architecture side of things. So again, it's a different way of thinking. And then what he came up with was fantastic. It allowed a great flow as such, but still feel very intimate and not just walk into a massive expanse of space. You can still have that intimate spaces to relax in.
Yeah. So, and I think the 40 meters is probably the smallest that you can actually do it in. Of course, the bigger you go, the easier it gets to make it look good, eh? Because to have one level, you basically need your headroom over that huge surface, and you don't want to have it look like a box. So that was the challenge. But yeah, bigger is easier. Smaller, I don't think it's, well, yeah, maybe a couple of meters smaller, but yeah, will be challenging. Yeah.
So how many crew would there be on a 40 meter trimaran like this? What did you anticipate the need for crew?
As much as you can. cleaning on super yachts is always the Achilles heel.
Yeah.
I think we allowed for 10.
Yeah, for 10. The bigger the boats, you know, on the 70, 80 meters, they have 16 and they always want 20, you know, just to keep ahead of cleaning. I mean, we have 10, isn't it, Peter, on this?
Yeah, but I think the allow, I mean, in a way, we could put more in, but this is the first setup is for 10. The armors are basically all technical spaces. There's no accommodation in there. Of course, it's still up for, you know, we have canoes there and jet skis and tenders. They're all stored basically inside the armors, the outer hulls. But yeah, I mean, you know, if we could put cabins in there too, if necessary. If
I mean, the sailing systems wise, you know, with the current technology now, with all the very fast captives and everything else, it's literally two people with boxes can sail the boat and fly by wire stuff. So actually sailing the boat isn't labor intensive anymore. Looking after guests is, you know. So if someone wants that kind of 6-7 star service, then you do need as many staff as you can to cater for that level of luxury afterwards, you know. So you're always looking for more crew. And, you know, depending on how owners work, some owners want very little crew, some want a lot of pampering. And interiors can breed up and down to adjust for that, you know. So it really does come down to the individual owner's requirements of what they want and what they don't want.
I'd like nothing more than to see something like this.
Trying to be as real as possible with these concepts. Right. It breaks our heart when you see some stuff that pops out and you're going, there's no way in hell that can be built, you know, or there's no way you're going to get a 35 or 40 meter catamaran up on foils. It's just physically not possible with the engineering involved. So again, we approach it with a very common sense way that, yes, it can be done, but still give the owners or the owner the full enjoyment of a huge interior space all on one level, going up onto an amazing sky deck, which is still massive, even though you got so much solar panels and all the roof lights and stuff like that. It's still an enormous sky deck, you know, much bigger than any of the 60 meters sky decks are out there by a factor of 2.
Who do you see as the client for Domus? Is it a young tech person with a family?
Yeah, I think so. I think it has to be family related because we designed it for that, basically. Well, I mean, we also thought, I mean, this is like the ultimate party platform, you know. If you look at it from another way, I mean, you can imagine this thing moored stern 2 somewhere, and you'd have this amazing view from the quay going in, and yeah. Or you have it floating somewhere, and it's just a big platform where you can be with a small family and be on your own little island, one level, or it can be a massive party platform too. So
I mean, we looked at it where, you know, we have the drop down platforms into the water where you can actually have a secure area for the young family to be. They're in the water, but they're secure. The parents can be still monitoring there, but they're still part of the action of the family group and stuff like that. So again, we did think through different scenarios, and you know, you bring it up and then you have suddenly got a dance floor or a large dining area outside. So again, I think it's a very versatile platform which will allow you to take on kind of any type of client base that's out there, to be honest. You know, it's perfect for the charter or the person that just wants to disappear for a while in a big space, you know. So
it's great. I really loved it when you sent it. I was amazed, and we'll be again putting that online so people can go and have a visual thing, of course. And hopefully we get somebody who's interested.
Absolutely. No, that's, again, it's myself and Peter, you know, we're a new kind of generation of designers who've cut our teeth with under the shadows of some great legends. And, you know, we're coming with a great balance of wisdom and knowledge now, but still have the hunger to try pushing the boundaries and not get, you know, pigeonholed with a certain design shape or style, or he's a classic designer or he's very contemporary. We'll do everything, motor, sail. I think it's all down to the fire in your belly in what gets you up in the morning. And we just love drawing. I mean, and playing with these amazing products out there and going, why not turn over a couple of more stones and see where this leads us? And it's fun. I mean, we have those moments going, okay, let's go this way. And suddenly we're almost giddy as we're drawing the boats. And I think it's a lot of fun. And I haven't had that for... Yeah, you don't do that often. And when you know you're onto something special, it's infectious. And then suddenly, you know, the idea Peter throws back, oh, that allows us to do something even more magic. You know, oh, we can do that now. You know, suddenly we got so much area of solar panels, we can tick that box straight off, you know. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun coming together, actually. It was infectious.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Peter and Rob. Really much appreciate it.
Super. Thank you very much, too.
Thank you very much, and really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat Interview, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to tune in later this week for Boat Briefing, our weekly roundup of super yacht news. And please don't forget to like and subscribe. Have a great week.